Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of November 15th, 2020. We begin with the latest updates from the local public health departments on the COVID-19. In the Ford County, and this is dated as of November 19th, 2020, there are a total of 573 cases, which is an increase of 133 cases from our last reading, and a total of 19 deaths, which is the same as last week. Number of tests administered, 10,952. In Iroquois County, there are a total of 1,345 cases, an increase of 331 from last week. These are 1,166 confirmed cases and 179 probable cases. 819 people have been released. 484 people are currently in home isolation, 16 are hospitalized, and 26 are deceased, which is an increase of 4 from last week. The breakdown of the cases, female 55.5%, male 44.5%. There have been 19,311 tests administered. 17,966 were negative, 1,166 confirmed positive, and 179 probable positive. Positivity rate is 6%. Now from the Ford County Record on the front page, drive-through COVID-19 testing site coming to Ford County. Ford County Public Health Department is announcing that a COVID-19 testing site is coming to the area next week. A mobile testing unit managed by the Illinois Department of Public Health will be stationed in Paxton according to the following schedule. On Friday, November 20th, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., anyone in line at 4 p.m. will be tested at Ford County Public Health Department, 235 North Taft Street in Paxton. Know before you go. Testing is free and open to all, regardless of symptoms. Simple nasal swabs will be used. A phone number and name are required to receive testing results. Individuals will be called with results within 4 to 7 business days. Individuals are encouraged to bring their health insurance card, but can still be tested without insurance. State-run community testing sites located in Champaign at the Marketplace Mall and Bloomington at 1106 Interstate Drive are open 7 days a week. Testing at these sites is free. For more information, visit the Illinois Department of Public Health website at dph.illinois.gov/COVID-19. Many healthcare providers in Ford County also have COVID-19 testing available. Please contact your provider or the facility to ask about testing criteria and appointment availability. We encourage our residents to take advantage of the mobile testing site or community-based testing sites and get tested right away if they are experiencing symptoms or after being exposed to an infected person, says Lana Sample, Ford County Public Health Department Administrator. Testing is an important first step that helps our staff identify and support you if you are infected, notify close contacts, and slow the spread of the virus. Also on the front page of the Record, Ford County Board hears concerns over state mitigations at meeting. Times are very tough for restaurateurs in Ford County. That's what Cindy Thielman of Happy Days Diner told the Ford County Board. With the latest mitigations in place because of COVID-19, she is operating on a carryout basis only. She wondered aloud, like many have, what the difference is between eating indoors and eating inside a closed outdoor tent. None of this makes a lot of sense, Thielman noted. She also noted that no one carries out breakfast, so she has lost her breakfast trade. We'll do what we can and hope to survive, but most small-town food establishments will go out of business because we can't afford this, Thielman said. Representative from District 2, Tim Nuss, said there are 8 such establishments in his district. How can we help them stay in business? They're scared to death. They will lose them, Nuss said. Some restaurant and bar owners in the region continue to welcome indoor dining. Public Health Department Administrator Lana Sample said she cannot enforce the state recommendations because she has no authority, but said the department supports them. Sheriff Mark Duran said his department, contrary to rumor, is not enforcing them, but tells owners they are taking a risk if they continue to allow patrons indoors to eat and drink. Also, the board passed its fiscal 2021 budget. It shows revenue of $4 million, but expenses of $4,200,000, a deficit of $193,000. Finance Chair Chase McCall said the county's greatest expenses are for personnel, $2.6 million in salary, and $425,000 for employee health insurance. Another large expense is the $185,000 in computer services. Also at the meeting, the board learned that the county's three parcels of farming ground have been leased for $103,000. Overview Committee Chair Tom McGuinn will look into getting the ground soil tested for the possible addition of lime, since that is the county's responsibility, according to the lease. The board approved a 3% salary raises for most non-union employees and a 25-cent per hour raise for hourly employees. The board approved allowing incoming circuit clerk Camelyn Johnson Anderson to be covered by county insurance immediately December 1st, and approved meeting and holiday schedules for the next fiscal year. The board learned that the personnel committee will meet with representatives of the probation department union on November 23rd at 10 a.m., and they applauded retiring circuit clerk Kim Evans' 38 years of service to the county and outgoing chairman Bob Lindgren's 18 years as clerk. Amy Frederick presented the two with certificates. Lindgren described the past 2 years as chairman as eventful. Also in the record, resident shares concerns at Paxton City Council meeting. Resident Derek Babs spoke to the Paxton City Council about this year's canceled Christmas parade. He noted that so many kids have missed so much this year and that children from low-income families have been especially hard hit. This is sometimes the only chance they have to see Santa. The kids had a great time at Halloween and nobody was hurt, Babs said. He was heartened to learn from Mayor Bill Ingold that during Paxton's virtual tree lighting event set for November 27th, Santa will be present handing out treats as families can drive by and pick up the candy canes. And EMA Director Ed Hansen announced that the group of volunteers on December 7th will host a Cookies with Santa event. I just think of the kids, Babs said. Now in the Ford County Chronicle, Paxton Alderman wants cat leash rule rescinded. Paxton. At least one Paxton Alderman would like the City Council to reconsider its recent approval of an ordinance change requiring cats to be leashed when outdoors. Alderman Cammie Johnson Anderson said she did some research in the weeks following the Council's approval of the new rule in September, discovering that the City's animal control officer, among others who would be responsible for enforcing the measure, was never consulted. I asked that this be brought back up because I felt this ordinance was brought up without enough research and discussion with people who would actually be in the trenches dealing with the issue, Johnson Anderson told her fellow aldermen last week. Johnson Anderson said that there remain unanswered questions about the city's ability to enforce the new leash requirement and how the city would pay for such enforcement. Johnson Anderson provided her research findings to her fellow aldermen last week and invited to the meeting several people who she felt could provide some answers to the questions, including June Bain, the city's animal control officer, and Ford County Treasurer Krisha Shoemaker, who collects revenue from county-issued animal license tags. Also present were Police Chief Coy Cornett, who oversees the animal control officer, and City Controller Treasurer Tammy Jensen, who handles the city's finances and city-issued tags. I just felt that it needed to be further discussed when you have the resources here, Johnson Anderson said. Johnson Anderson voted against the leash rule for cats when it was adopted via a 4-3 vote. At that time, Johnson said she reviewed the old animal ordinance and said she felt it already contained adequate provisions prohibiting cats running at large. With the new rule, cats found roaming the city without a leash can be impounded, with a $25 fee charged per impoundment. The new rule was proposed after Alderman Susan Satterley said a concerned resident indicated they were having problems specifically with domesticated cats, not feral cats, coming onto their property. But according to Johnson Anderson, if you want to pick on cats, the solution is not to put a leash on them. She said there are few people in Paxton, if any, who would be willing to comply with such a requirement, and enforcement is another issue entirely. That's why I brought it up, to have further discussion, so people could be educated more about this issue instead of trying to not even put a Band-Aid on the problem, Johnson Anderson said. Despite Johnson Anderson asking for an immediate discussion to take place in the presence of Bain, the council voted 4-3 last week to refer the matter to one of its committees for further debate. Alderman Rob Pacey made the motion to refer it to committee, which was seconded by Alderman Eric Evans. Voting yes were Evans, Pacey, Dean Gykin, and Satterley, and voting no were Johnson Anderson, Mike Wilson, and Justin Withers. If we're going to discuss something substantial about changing an ordinance, let's do it in committee first, Pacey suggested prior to the vote, and have the committee make a recommendation to the full council. I hope the committee would do its homework this time, Johnson Anderson said after the vote, because I did it for you. Mayor Bill Engel said he would try to set up a committee meeting to discuss Johnson Anderson's concern for some time this week. However, Engel said on Tuesday that no meeting would be held either this week or next week, and one may not even be at all. Engel said aldermen were sent an email Monday asking for their feelings on whether to hold another meeting on the issue, and he was waiting their response. If a meeting is held at any point after November 30th, Johnson Anderson will no longer be on the council. That's because she announced her resignation effective November 30th toward the end of last week's meeting. While clearly frustrated by the council's lack of willingness to immediately revise the cat leash topic, that was not the reason she resigned as a Ward 3 alderman. Rather, Johnson Anderson said she decided to step down from the alderman position in order to allow her to devote the necessary time to her new job as Ford County Circuit Clerk. She begins her duties as Circuit Clerk on December 1st after she won an election to a 4-year term earlier this month. Next story from the PBL School District. PBL staying with in-person instruction. Paxton. Paxton Buckley Lota Schools will continue to provide in-person instruction as long as we can do so safely, Superintendent Cliff McClure said in a letter to staff, students, and families on Friday. But he said preparations are being made for the possibility of transitioning to fully remote learning in the event it becomes necessary. McClure posted the letter on PBL's website after the administrator of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District recommended last week that schools in neighboring Champaign County transition to fully remote education through January 5, 2021, due to the community spread of COVID-19 in that area. We are closely monitoring the situation of community spread in Ford and the other counties which our district boundaries lie, McClure said in the letter. We have daily contact with the Ford County Public Health Department and are diligent in reporting, communicating, and contact tracing any cases that we become aware of involving PBL staff or students. At this time, PBL is committed to providing in-person instruction as long as we can do so safely. McClure noted that despite his district's mitigation efforts to combat the spread of COVID-19 at PBL schools, it may become necessary at some point to transition to remote learning due to the community spread of COVID-19. Currently, PBL is providing in-person instruction to those students who selected that option prior to the school year, or remote instruction to those who chose that option instead. Our staff and students have been busy preparing for the possibility of fully remote learning by creating and practicing lessons and activities that can take place virtually, McClure said in the letter. Teachers are familiarizing themselves with their student and their students with various online platforms and tools. McClure said the district would communicate any changes to the staff, student, and families as soon as possible so plans can be made. PBL has had several students and staff test positive for COVID-19 in recent weeks, including a second grader and a fourth grader at Clara Peterson Elementary School last Friday, a seventh grader at PBL Junior High School last Friday, and a staff member at PBL High School on Monday. But McClure told the school board last week that there has been no evidence of community spread within the PBL's three schools. Rather, it appears students and staff had contracted COVID-19 elsewhere in their communities, he said. Kids are safer here. People are safer here at school than they are outside in the community, McClure told the board. I just had a conversation last Thursday with Lana Sample, Ford County Public Health Administrator, and she said that she feels very comfortable with us being in school. As I stand here today, this is probably one of the only places in our community where everyone wears a mask and stays 6 feet apart from each other for most of the day. While the option of going remote remains a possibility if needed, PBL wants to continue in-person instruction, McClure said, because face-to-face instruction is the most powerful instruction you are going to receive. People are more attentive, they can ask questions, and there's no worry about whether there's a reliable internet connection or not, McClure said. McClure said he would continue to rely on the guidance of the Ford County Public Health Department and Illinois Department of Public Health moving forward. We'll continue to stay in contact with those entities, McClure told the board. McClure said PBL's teachers recently were surveyed about whether they would want to continue in-person instruction or instead go to exclusively remote instruction, and the survey showed most teachers want to stay in school. Students' parents, meanwhile, have been wildly supportive of the plan, McClure said. Even so, every building principal and every building design team has worked on remote plans just in case we would have to go complete remote. Both the high school and the junior high school would go fully remote under the emergency plans, while the elementary school would use what McClure described as a hybrid model. Students and staff in each school continue to practice the plans in case they are needed eventually. Also at last Thursday's board meeting, a couple of parents of students in the district addressed the board with concerns about remote learning, as well as in-person learning amid the COVID-19 pandemic. One parent, whose daughter, a pre-kindergarten student, is new to the district, said she was concerned about the district's ability to provide remote instruction to students who may have unreliable internet access. There's a big community out there that doesn't have internet access at home or the ability to do so, the parent said. McClure responded by noting that the district purchased and installed some Wi-Fi hotspots at community centers throughout the district that can be used by students. He said the district continues to work to address the needs of students lacking reliable internet at home. I feel pretty confident we address most of those needs of students who don't have reliable internet, and we will continue to do so, McClure said. He also noted that in certain circumstances via remote learning situation, teachers would have the option of providing certain lessons via pen and paper. Meanwhile, another parent, Meredith Mann, expressed concerns about the lack of flexibility in the district's instructional options. She said that after several COVID-19 cases in PBL schools were announced, she asked one of her children's schools whether she had the option of withdrawing them from in-person instruction and placing them in remote learning, and the school told her that it was not an option, unless the school was ill. It was hard to wrap my head around, Mann said. It's an evaluation that a parent should be able to make. In response, McClure noted that parents were given the option prior to the start of the school year to select whether they wanted their kids to participate in in-person learning or remote learning. He said parents were given ample time, 5 weeks, to make their decision. It was kind of a commitment by the parent, McClure said. Also last week, McClure and PBL High School Athletic Director Brock Niebuhr told the board that the high school's winter sports teams would not be playing games this winter unless the Illinois Department of Public Health, the Illinois State Board of Education, and the Illinois High School Association can provide some unified guidance. McClure said PBL has traditionally followed the guidance of the Illinois Department of Public Health and the Illinois State Board of Education on matters of public health and it will continue to do so. While the two entities are advising against any high school sports contests being played in Illinois this winter, the IHSA is wanting them played as previously planned. The reason PBL intends to follow the guidance of the Department of Public Health and the state school board is twofold, McClure said. First, we want to be safe. Second, if PBL went against the guidance of these entities, the district would be exposed to liability in the event of a resulting outbreak. We would be exposed with no tort immunity, and we would have no insurance if we don't follow a lot of this guidance, McClure said. Our hope and recommendation is that before we start everything, the entities above can get on with the same page and provide us with clear guidance, here Beaver said. At this point, it almost seems like we need to follow the guidance that we've followed with Illinois Department of Public Health all along. It's my hope that these groups can come together and come up with a plan that is safe for everyone to participate. But I don't know that's going to happen. It doesn't seem like the communication between the Illinois High School Association and those other entities has happened much. And finally, also last week, the school board voted 3-1 with Steve Pacey in dissent to approve the waiving of high school final exams at the end of the fall and spring semesters this school year. PBL High School Principal Travis Dooley said 76% of his school staff indicated in a survey that they were in favor of waiving the final exams as students have lost instructional time this school year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Meanwhile, McClure said the district is considering the possibility of reducing the number of credit hours required to graduate due to the pandemic as well. Now we'll turn to the obituaries from Ford County for the week of November 15, 2020. Daryl Kuntz. Daryl Kuntz, 82, formerly of Fairfield, passed away at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday, November 8, 2020, at his home in Paxton. A private graveside service was conducted November 13th at the Bunker Cemetery in Renard with military rites provided by Anthony Wayne Post, 176 American Legion, and the Wayne County Post, number 4535 VFW. Anita I. Drake. Anita Irene Snyder Drake, 73, of Waukesha, Wisconsin, passed away on Wednesday, November 11th. 2020, at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. A private service and burial will be held in Glen Cemetery, Paxton, alongside her parents and brother. Martise Evans. Martise Evans, 48, of Gibson City, passed away suddenly on Tuesday, November 10, 2020, at his home in Gibson City. A celebration of life service will be held at a later date in the spring. Thomas Wormnest. Thomas E. Wormnest, 66, of Sibley, peacefully passed away Sunday, November 15th at his home in Sibley. Funeral services were held at 10 a.m. Friday, November 20th at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, with Pastor Gary Fairchild officiating. Burial will be in Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to the Sibley Sportsman's Club, the Cropsey Sportsman Club, or to an organization of the donor's choice. On November 5th, Jan Brucker passed peacefully away at the age of 65 while at Illini Rehab and Healthcare. Per his wish, no funeral service will be held. We ask that in lieu of flowers, that donation be made to the Campbell Group Home, 221 West Campbell, Rantoul, Illinois. Burial was held on November 16th at the Mount Hope Cemetery in Sibley. Virginia F. Mayer. Virginia F. Mayer, 99, of Urbana, and formerly of Onarga and Ocean Springs, Mississippi, passed away Saturday, November 7th, 2020, at Brookdale, Urbana. Cremation rites were accorded by the Knapp Funeral Home in Onarga. Services will be held at a later date with burial in Onarga Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Transitions Hospice or to the Onarga Methodist Church. Mary Jane Zumwalt. Mary Jane Zumwalt, 92, of Sheldon, passed away on Wednesday, November 11, 2020, at Sheldon Healthcare. Private graveside services will be held at Sheldon Cemetery, the Reverend Neil Larimore officiating. Memorials may be made to the Iroquois Memorial Hospital Auxiliary, the Iroquois Memorial Hospice, Sheldon United Methodist Church, or the Sheldon Library. Bonnie Mae Potts. Bonnie Mae Potts, 89, of Chevenix, passed away on Thursday, November 12, 2020, at her home. Funeral services were held Saturday, November 14, at the United Church of Christ in Chevenix, with the Reverend Joel Brown officiating. Burial followed at Evergreen Cemetery in Chevenix. Sylvia Campos. Sylvia Campos, 60, of Onarga, passed away Friday, November 13, 2020, at Advocate Christ Medical Center in Oaklawn, Illinois. Services were held Friday, November 20th at 1 p.m. at Knapp Funeral Home in Onarga, with Pastor Francisco Geronimo officiating. Burial will follow in Onarga Cemetery. Fredna Ray Glover. Fredna Ray Glover, 80, of Milford, passed away on Friday, November 13, 2020, at her home in Milford. A private graveside service will take place at Maple Grove Cemetery in Milford at a later date. Memorials may be made to the Milford Ambulance Service or Crossroads Youth Center of Milford. Edward F. Galloway. Edward F. Galloway, 83, of Watseka, passed away on Friday, November 13, 2020, at Watseka Rehab and Healthcare. Graveside services were held Thursday, November 19th at Sugar Creek Cemetery in Stockland, with graveside military rites by Watseka American Legion Post No. 23 and Iroquois County VFW Post No. 7450. Joan Diane Rudin. Joan Diane Mogler Rudin passed away Friday, November 13th at Carl Hospital in Urbana. Private funeral services were held Tuesday, November 17th, with burial following at the Apostolic Christian Cemetery in Cisna Park. Memorials may be made to Fairview Haven Nursing Home in Fairbury or to the donor's choice. Marvin E. Zedyk, and that's pronounced Z-E-E-D-Y-K. Marvin E. Zedyk, 95, of Danforth, passed away Saturday, November 14, 2020, at Charleston Rehab Center in Charleston. Private graveside services will be held at the Danforth Reformed Cemetery in Danforth. Military rites will be provided by the Danforth American Legion. Donald E. Hemenover. Donald E. Hemenover, 71, of Bourbonnais, formerly of Clifton, passed away at Riverside Medical Center in Kankakee on Sunday, November 15, 2020. A private funeral mass will be held at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Clifton. Father Vern Arsenault will officiate. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Uplifted Care or Ronald McDonald House. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.